It's HBR, All Things Considered, and I'm Dave Lawrence. Today we got a very special guest, Livingston Taylor. Yes, brother of James Taylor, guitar player, singer, teacher at one of the most prestigious music schools in the world, Berklee in Boston. He's got a three-island tour starting tomorrow at the Mac, then Saturday at the Palace, Sunday at the Hapuna Prince Hotel. And best of all, we've got him here with us right now. Welcome, Livingston.
Thanks, Dave.
The shows that you've got coming up here. What is in store? Give us an idea.
First off, if you like James Taylor, you will like Livingston Taylor. Now, if you don't like James Taylor, I doubt that. My wife just pointed out, no, you'll still like Livingston Taylor. Musically, I'm very varied. Show tunes and standards, my own songs. One of the things that really surprises people who haven't seen me, Dave, it surprises them how funny I am. But I think why that happens is that people are very relaxed in my presence. And that's because I'm so relaxed with them. I love being on stage. I love being in the presence of my audience.
A lot of interesting stuff there. You're going to be doing these solo?
I'm going to be doing them solo.
Your musical background stretches back to really early part of your life. And when you talk about how comfortable you are performing for people, I can't help but think that it tracks back to that. As an example, when I read about you, one of your first musical efforts, you're just a little tiny kid memorizing a radio jingle for snuff, I read.
That is true. As an infant, I am told, I do not personally remember this, but I am told by my mother, this was in North Carolina, I would lightly hum, and she said, well, what is that? And she was listening to the radio, and there was a commercial for snuff, tube rose. And the lyric, which I didn't have at the time, but I've got now, if your snuff's too strong, it's wrong. Get tube rose, mild tube rose. You'll feel much better all day long with tube rose. Mild tube rose. And that, supposedly, is my first cover.
I love your first cover. What a great way to put it, too. And dialing back onto the New England thing, I guess Livingston Taylor we're talking to, brother James, coming to town. He's got dates, unfortunately, not in Honolulu. But look at your background. You end up back in New England. Was Joan Baez's manager, got you a gig that helped launch your career at the YMCA in Worcester. Explain the move back to Boston and how that worked, which I understand led to opening for Joni Mitchell at BU and some other important gigs.
What happened, Dave, is I was born in Boston, raised in North Carolina. My father was a doctor and had gone to Harvard Medical School where he met my mother. They went back to North Carolina in the early 50s. And so I was raised in Chapel Hill. And then I was sort of a crummy student. So I went back to Boston to finish up high school at a bit of an alternative school and wound up just staying there. And at the age of 16, really aggressively started playing the guitar. And by 17, 18, I really was a good guitar player and used that as an underpinning from which to build a career. And Manny Greenhill was the manager who heard me and booked me one of my first shows at the Why Not Coffee House at the Worcester YMCA in 67, 68. That was the start of it. And indeed, at BU, opening for Joni Mitchell. I remember so vividly that show. I was 18, third on the bill with another fellow named Jamie Brockett. And Jamie played, and there were about 3,000 people there to see Joni. And when I came on, the audience was restless. I played to sort of grumbles. I could hear them grumbling. And I went ahead and played my set. And by the time I got through, they gave me a standing ovation and an encore. And I remember thinking to myself, this works. I can get through to an audience. That I had something that I knew that I could continue to do that would be supported.
That's such a cool thing you said. I mean, because you end up, he's also, Livingston is a, you're still part of the faculty at Berklee, yeah?
Yeah, Berklee College of Music
right.
in Boston.
So there's a heavy, heavy school
I've
there.
I've taught there for 30 years now.
Right, right. So when I think about that way you were talking about the confidence that this one gig had and the fact that at school you're really trying to get that confidence into kids, basically, who are coming there as students. My question would be, were there other times, though, when you went on stage and it was not a good response, where you were kind of disappointed? And how did you make it so that those didn't overshadow moments like the time that were so empowering?
That's a wonderful question, a question rarely asked of me. And that's a great question, Dave. And what happens, occasionally, you play, and you're just not the person to be playing. For whatever reason, you're not intersecting properly with an audience. And it's very important to remember, when you do unbelievably well, there will doubtless be a couple of people who will be underwhelmed. Conversely, when you're not doing that well, there are people who, for whatever reason, are enjoying it regardless of how you feel about it. And what this is to say is how you feel about your show is remarkably unimportant. I say to my students often, I ask them, do you tape yourself playing? And they say, yes, we do. At which point I suggest that they knock that off and not do it. Because what you need to see is not a video of you performing. If you want to tape something, tape your audience while you're performing and see how they're doing in the presence of your vision, in the presence of your music. And what I teach when I teach my course on stage performance is that it is all about your audience. You need them. They don't need you. They have plenty of places they can go with their discretionary time and income. And it's so important to remember when you're on stage that it isn't about you. It was never about you. It was always about them.
That's such a valuable answer.
And audiences hear that. They hear when you are honored to be there. They hear that.
That's some great advice. Comes from somebody who is constantly having to talk to people at that school, which another part of it is you invite these guest speakers in, folks like Steven Tyler, Jimmy Buffett, John Mayer. How do you arrange that stuff? Is that just because you know they have star power, or maybe that you have a relationship with them and you think they can bring something?
Yeah, it's very interesting to watch people talk about what they do. John Mayer, Jimmy Buffett, and Steven Tyler, these are very, very bright, thoughtful men who have spent a lot of time thinking about what they do.
You ought to get Steven to come sit in with you while you're in Maui, see if he's over there. I don't know if they're on tour or whatever, but
Dave, would be fun.
That would blow your audience's mind.
Yes.
It's an amazing time getting to talk to you, Livingston. Gig at the Mac, you're over at the Palace, Hapuna Prince Hotel, but not in Honolulu. Brother James, very fun to talk to. It's Livingston Taylor, our guest on All Things Considered. Really do appreciate it, man.
I had a great time, and I'm going to get my butt back to Honolulu, and you and I are going to hang.
We got to do that. It'll be Wicked Pissa, the balls.
I have to tell you that I do lots of radio interviews, and this is as good as they get. You're a terrific interviewer. You are a sincere and interested conversationalist, and it's really good, Dave.
That's really nice to hear. Well, will you keep me in mind if your brother's ever looking for someone to talk to? Because I'd love to get to him.
I certainly will. I'll throw him your way. We speak all the time, and I will definitely let him know that you're as good as it gets.
High fiving you. Stay safe, Livingston.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Aloha, my friends. It's Livingston Taylor joining you. You might remember when I was a guest right here on All Things Considered. It's member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. You and I are with my friend, Dave Lawrence.
I don't know what words to say, but when I see you, I know they'll come. They'll be words that finally say how much I've needed someone, just one.